This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, so we start on Daf Daladam with Aleph at the near the top of the page, where we've established now that the posuk from which we learn that if a naro gets married, if a naro is becomes meureses, she becomes betrothed, it can be done by the kinyan of kesef, and the kesef goes to the account of the father. We learn that from the original posuk we tried, and that was v'yotzo chinom ein kesef la'adoin ze, aval yesh kesef la'adoin acher. That if an amo hivriyo becomes a naro, she reaches the age of 12 and a half, or becomes or reaches puberty, she becomes mature, at that point she goes free, and there's no compensation paid to the adon, to the person who had bought her labor. And the Gemara learns from the yitzur, from the addition of not only is it the yotzo chinom, that she goes out free, but ein kosef, there is no payment of money. From that we learn, ein kosef la'adon ze, there's no money paid to this case of a woman being taken out of the authority of an adon. But in the other case where a woman can be taken out of the authority of an adon, that is kiddushin, there would be a payment, and the payment goes to the father. That's where we learn it from. So the Gemara challenges that. And we are now six lines from the top of the page on Daf Dalad Amud Aleph, and says, V'hai v'yotzo chinom l'hachi hu da'ato. Is it correct to say that that's what we learn from v'yotzo chinom? It's true that v'yotzo chinom ein kosef entails a yitur, it entails a ribui. There are words that would be seemingly redundant. But that's not what we need it for. Homabayale, we need it for something else, which is taught to us at Lichadatanya and Abraisa. The Tanya, where we learn, v'yotzo chinom, the Torah tells us that if she becomes a naro, she goes out free. Elu yemei bagrus, that's if she becomes a bogeris. That's when she reaches 12 and a half. Sorry, earlier I said we were talking about a naro at 12 and a half. I meant a naro at 12. She becomes a naro when she's 12. She's a bogeris when she's 12 and a half. And the Braisa says, from v'yotzo chinom, we learn that if she's a bogeris, she is released from his authority free of charge, free of compensation. Ein kosef, so what does the ein kesef at the end of the posuk add? Elu yumei naros, that comes to teach us that even when she's a naro, she goes out free without payment, even when she turns 12. Now the Gemara further on will ask the obvious question, as Rashi points out, and that is, if she goes out of the ownership of the Adon when she's 12, then of course she's not going to be in his ownership when she's 12 and a half. Why do I need to be told that? And the Gemara further on explains why we need both of these psukim, or both of these words. But what's important here is that we use them both up. We use these ribuyim up. They are utilized in order to teach us laws specific to an amo ivrio. There is no ribuy left. There are no alternative. There are no redundant words left from which we can learn any halachas with respect to erusin. So how can this be the source from which we learn that money is paid and that the money belongs to the father? Let's look at the Rashi on that. So once again, remember to keep a finger on the page and another finger on the Rashi. And that way you are able to move your attention from one to the other without losing any concentration. Where Rashi says, V'yotzo chinom, this is about 8 or 9 lines from the thin lines of Rashi, V'yotzo chinom, V'loi piresh matai teitzei, it doesn't say when she goes out, it just says she goes out chinom, she goes out with no compensation. Elu yemei bagrus, shehi mishtano, minarus li yis begeris, that's at the point that she transitions from being a naro and becomes a begeris. En kosef, what does the en kosef teach us? Elodover acher motzio, something else causes her to come out. Not money, she doesn't buy her freedom. She gets out without money. What is it that brings about her freedom? Elu yemei na'arus. That's her becoming a na'aros. She turns 12. Ulekame porich nichinafke lo benarus bagrus ma'avidite. And further on, the Gemara will ask, if she goes out when she's 12, what do we need to be told anything about when she's 12 and a half? She won't be there when she's 12 and a half. So we left with a posuk fully utilized for the laws of Amo Ivrio, and nothing available for the laws of Erusin. Omar Ravino says, Ravino, no, there is still a ribui. We can still learn something. There are still it's still an aspect, a dimension of this posuk, which is not yet utilized to teach us anything, to teach us laws of Amo Ivriya. What is it? In Kain Lema Kro Ein Kesef. The Torah could have spelt the word Ein, Aleph Nun, without a Yud. And then we would have been able to learn everything we need to know for Amo Ivriya. We would have known that both as a, not only as a Bergeris, but even as a Naro, she is released from the control and authority of the Adon without any money being paid as compensation. My Ein Kesef, but the Torah says Ein with a Yud. The Torah inserts a Yud between the Aleph and the Nun. Ein Kesef L'Adon Zeh, Aval Yesh Kesef L'Adon Acher. From that's what we learn from. Not from the fact that it says Ein Kesef, it's the way it spells Ein Kesef. To spell Ein Kesef with the addition of the Yud teaches us that there's something additional to be able to learn here. Uman Nihu, and who is that Adon that gets money when the girl leaves his authority? Av, that's the father. Now I'm sure you're all concerned about what precedent do we have for spelling the word Ein without a Yud. That's just not how you spell Ein. The root of the word is Aleph Yud Nun. That's how you spell it. And the Gemara, of course, is going to deal with that. Umimai Dedar Shinan Hochi. Where do you get it from? That's a valid method of being Doresh. Where do you get it from that you may research the detail of a posuk to such a degree that the word Yud the letter Yud in the word Ein constitutes an indication that you've got to learn something over and above the natural context of the posuk? Says the Gemara, we do have precedent. The Tanya, for we learn in a brisa, the zero Ein lo, if a woman has no zera. Here we're talking about a case in Vayikra of a daughter of a Kohen. So she grows up in the home of a Kohen eating truma. She then gets married to a Yisrael. And from that moment on is no longer permitted to eat truma. The Yisrael dies or divorces her. The zera ein lo, and she has no children, goes back to her father's house. In that case, she may once again eat truma, provided zera ein lo, provided she in fact has no children. If she had a child with her husband, the Yisrael, then she can never eat truma again. Ein li elo zara. The Brisa says, that tells me about her children, that if she has a child, she may not eat truma anymore. Zera zara minayin. How do I know that even if she only has a grandchild, that she doesn't go back to eating truma? So the case would be, she gets married, has a child grows up, has a grandchild, and then the child dies, and then her husband dies. So now she's left with a grandchild with no child. Can she go back to her father's house and eat truma? No, she cannot. How do I know that? Talmud Loma, Zero Ein Lo, Ayin Lo. The Gemara comes with the Brisa comes with a very interesting limud and says, Ein with a Yud can be pronounced ayin, with an ayin. So although from a from the perspective of the way the word is spelt, these two words have got a completely different sort of different root, ayin and ein, aleph yud nun and ayin yud yud nun. Ayin means seek, search. It comes from the word ayin and eye. Look, seek, search. That's what ayin means. Nevertheless, because phonetically there's a similarity in the pronunciation of the two words, it's a valid drosha. So from that additional yud, because ayin with a yud is pronounced kind of ayin, there's a pronunciation of that yud. It's not the same as if it would just be aleph nun. If it would just be aleph nun, then for example Israelis would pronounce it almost like n. With the yud, we all pronounce it ayin, because it's really ayin, and ayin is like ayin. And from there we learn, you've got to look and see, maybe she has grandchildren, maybe she has great-grandchildren. You've got to go down her lineage as far as you can go. And if there's any descendant of this woman, then she cannot go back and eat truma with her father. That's how we learn it. The Brisa goes on to say, V'ein li ela zera kosher. That's all talking about Zera Kosher, about a kosher child, a child who is a proper Yisrael. Zera Posel Minayin, but what would be the din if she had a Zera Posel? Rashi says that's going Mamzer, for example, if she has a Mamzer. Tosfos explains that doesn't mean that she has a mamzer, because for her to have a mamzer, she would have had to have had an illicit relationship. And that would have puzzled her from Truma already without the child. So we're really talking about where the grandchild is a mamzer. So what happens if her son has an illicit relationship, has a child who is a mamzer, she now, and then he dies. So she now only has a grandchild who is a mamzer. Is that also considered zera? Is that also considered children? Talmud Loma, zero ein lo, ayin lo. Once again, we use the same drosha. Zero ein lo, with that extra yud, we say ayin lo, seek, research, check. Is there anybody, even if it's not somebody kosher, if there's anybody that constitutes a definition of a descendant of this woman, that person is considered a zera, and therefore she cannot eat truma. Ask the Gemara, v'ha'afiktil zera zara. V'ha'afiktil zera zara. You've already used this up. You've already used the extra you to say ayin lo to teach me that even if she's got grandchildren, how are you now learning it to teach us that even if the child is a posel? That's the second thing. We would need another limud for that. So the Gemara retracts and says, zera zara loy itzrich kro. The truth is we were wrong. To learn zera zara, you don't need this drosha of ayin lo. You don't need a posel for that. The b'nei bonim harehen kebonim. Because grandchildren are like children. So you don't need a posuk for that. That's understood. Ki yitzrichro lezera posul. What you would need a posuk for is for zera posul. The way that with a grandchild is a mamzer, you would need to know that that's also considered a child. How would you know that? Because zera ein lo, written with a yud, which means ein lo, search and research and seek and find any kind of descendant that would constitute a descendant to puzzle her from truma. She cannot go back to her father's house to eat truma. Ask the Gemara of Tana Gufe Minale de Dorish Hachi. And where does the Tana get it from that it's valid to question the way ein is spelt? We don't have ein spelt anywhere with a yud. Where does the Tana of the Brisa learn from that it's legitimate to darshan out of the use of a yud between the aleph and the nun in the word ein? Answers the Gemara. Amrik, what they say is, well, the way they understand it is following. Ksiv, me'ein bilam, u me'ein yevomi. When the word me'ein is used, me'ein means refuse. So when the messengers come back and they say, Bilam refuses to come, Me'ein is written without a yud. And if you look at Rashi, and once again use your other finger, and the Rashi is just a little bit lower than where we are in the Gemara, Me'ein Bilam, Ein Bedato Leilech Imono, says Rashi, not all the Rishonim agree with this, that Me'ein also has, it comes from the root Ein. Some of the Rishonim say, no, that's not really correct. Me'ein comes from the root of Mema'ein. To refuse is not from ein, it's a different word altogether. And they go into a whole question, in that case, how can we learn this drosha? But Rashi resolves that by saying, mei ein means ein bedate. It is not his intention to come with us. So it's a negative. Ein is a negative, mei ein is a negative intention. Then a non-existent intention is mei ein, and that is written without a yud. So you see that aleph nun with a tzeira under the aleph can be written without a yud in between. And may en yevomi, the same in my yobam, the woman says, my yobam doesn't want to marry me, doesn't want to be miyabim me, and once again, may en is written without a yud. The loik siv behu yud, back in the Gemara, in both those cases, yud is not written in the word may en, v'hochok siv be yud, and here we see ein is written with a yud, shema min alidrosha hu da'ato. So we see that it comes to teach us a drosha. Let's take the Gemara up till there for the moment. So the first thing that we've got to look at is that the word, according to Rashi, that me'ein is comes from the root of ein, so we can understand that. The second thing we've got to say is there is an assumption in the Gemara that technically ein could be written without a yud, although it never is. The only time that ein is written without a yud is when it's used in the form of me'ein, of refuse. But if it's just used in the form of ein, then the Gemara wasn't able to find any case where it's written without a yud. If there were such a case, the Gemara would have brought it. the fact that the Gemara had to bring its examples from Me'en Yevami and Me'en Bilom, Me'en Bilom, and was not able to bring it from the word Ein itself, we can assume that there's no case in Tanakh where Ein is spelled Aleph Nun. In that case, the question comes again, so how can you darshan from it? If the way that it's that Ein is always spelled is Aleph Yud Nun, how can you darshan from the existence of the Yud between the Aleph and the Nun? And then you said, the Gemara says, because Me'en, you see that technically it could be written without a Yud. Okay, then you've got to say that wherever the word Ein appears, there is an understanding that it means something more than just no or not. It means something more than that. And this is not really the way a lot of the Rishonim and others are concerned about this issue, about how can you really learn from this if everywhere in Tanakh it's spelt that way. And the only time it's not spelt that way is when it's in fact another word with another root. There's a Tesis Yom Tov that goes into quite a lot of detail over this. And someone just said it's a kind of a light limud. It's not something that one can really learn something in detail from. But I think that one has to say that what the Gemara is teaching us here is the word Ein means something different from the word Lo. Normally you say from a grammatical point of view that you tend to use the word Ein when you're talking in the present tense and Lo when you're talking in the future or the past tense. So in the if you would say, I did not know, you would say Lo Yadati in Hebrew. If you say, I will not know, you would say Lo Eida. If you say, I do not know, you would say, Ein ani yodea, or Ein neni yodea. And in modern Hebrew, it's become rather loose, and you'll find people in Israel saying, Ani lo yodea, but that's not grammatically correct. You should say, Ein neni yodea, because in the present tense, Ein is the word that is used. But the Gemara here is giving us another dimension of the word Ein. The word Ein, lo means, is a more superficial word than Ein. Ein means after analysis and consideration, I find that there's nothing here. There could be and there might be, but there isn't. Law means just a straight no, there isn't. Ein means ayin. I've researched, or one may find other areas where there is such a thing, but in this area it doesn't apply. And maybe that's partially why we do it in the present tense. If we're talking about the past tense or the future tense, we're not talking in the present, we can't research. But if we're talking in the present, Ein ani yodea means, right now at this minute, I don't know, but maybe if I was ma'ayin, maybe if I went into it, there are things I would be able to find. All I can say is that right now I don't have it. In fact, it's a more restricted use of the word. In this area, in this particular area, we're saying Ein. But there are other areas where it might well apply. In the case of an Amo Ivrio coming out of the authority of an Adurin, there is no Kesef, Ein Kesef. But there could well be other places where there is kesef. In fact, there is another place where there is kesef, and that's in the case of Kiddushin Naro, where there's kesef that goes to the father. So Ein implies, in this specific case, the answer is no. However, there might be other similar cases where it is ayin. You should check and you should see whether in other cases it might in fact apply. So what we have here then is a redefinition in the Gemara of the difference between the word Ein and the word Lo, and that becomes quite interesting because it means that technically in all areas in the Torah, whenever the word Ein is used, it might be quite fun to have a look at the word and see why the Torah doesn't use Lo, and whether there's some element of Ayin that you need to check and you need to find. We say in the davening every day, Umoso ha'odo min ha'behimo Ayin. There is no difference between an animal and a human being. Ayin means in this respect there's no difference. In other areas there are many differences. It doesn't say just that there is no difference between a human being and animal. It says Ayin. It uses the word Ayin implying specifically in this area. But Ayin, if you research carefully and you look at a human being and an animal, you will find many differences. Only in this area you won't find. So it's actually quite interesting, and I haven't done it yet, but as one goes through the parishes and the Chumash and the Siddur, it would be quite interesting to notice every time the word Ein is used whether you can apply this kind of logic to it. That's as far as the Gemara goes. Now the Ritvo has a very beautiful piece, and I'm going to learn the Ritvo with you, although you don't have it in front of you, unless some of you have managed to acquire the Kovetz Meforshim, in which case you will find the Ritvo if you have the Kovetz Meforshim. The Ritvo will be on page Vov of the Ritvo section. Otherwise, I'll try and get it to you. Now with my traveling around, it's just not as simple to scan these things in and get them to you in time, but I will try and do so. But I'm going to read and translate the Ritvo, and then I'll summarize it, and then we'll go further. The Ritvo says, Ikalamedak. It's interesting to note. The ha beferik yesh neichalin, ha dichtiv befashis nachlus, bein ein loy, marbinon b'nei bonim, midichtiv bein ein loy ayin olav. V'chein nami b'yavomis gabi yavom. The comment of the Ritvo is, it's interesting, he says, that in both nachalus and yibum, nachalus are the laws of inheritance, and yibum, you know what yibum, in those cases, where it says uvein ein loy, it says, and if the person doesn't have a son, then the following will be the halachas. In both of those cases, explains the Gemara learns, you've got to go looking at grandchildren as well. It's not only an immediate child; it includes bnei vonim, it includes grandchildren and great grandchildren. And we learn that from ayin olav. It says, bein ein loy, he doesn't have a son. Ayin. Seek, research, check. Maybe he has a child somewhere, a son somewhere down the line. So both for Yibum and for Nachalus, the existence of a descendant, even if it's two or three generations down the line, is relevant. It doesn't have to be a son. Alma, so you see, Bnei Bonim, Einam Kebonim. This proves, says the Ritvo, that Bnei Bonim are not like Bonim, that we don't treat grandchildren like children. Because if we treated grandchildren like children, we wouldn't use the limud of ayin. To say, vein ein loy means ayin loy, go and seek whether there's one. We would just say grandchildren are the same as children, any descendant. Children means descendants, not only the first generation children. The same as in our Gemara here. We initially wanted to say that from ein, we learn ein kesef, that from vezera ein law in the case of truma, we initially wanted to say that means go and check, maybe there's a grandchild, maybe there's a great grandchild, and then the Gemara says no, you don't need a posuk for that because they bonim harehim kebonim. The posuk is used to say go and check, maybe there's a psul, maybe there's a mamzer somewhere down the line. Meaning that if it's just for children, there's no need to check. Ask the Ritvo, but we see in the case of nachalos and yibum that we do need the drosha of ayin lo in order to include grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And he answers, Betilzu betosvus, he brings a tosvus that answers, the shiny hocha dichtiv zera, mashba afilu b'nei vanim. Hainu namid amin, adizile zera, zara lo tzorich kro d'ein lo. Answers the Ritvo in the name of Tosfos. The word Zera means Bnei Vonim. If the word Zera is used, as it is in the case of the woman who marries, the Bas Kohen who marries a Yisrael, and then he dies or divorces, so it says the Zera in law. If it uses the word Zera, if the Torah uses the word Zera, it means all descendants, no matter how far down the line. Not so if it uses the word ben. So he says, let me just get If it says ben or bat, it means son and daughter. If it says zera, it means any descendant. So in the case of nachalus and yibum, it uses the word uvein ein lo. That would only tell me that a child, a son, patters from yibum, or is relevant for nachalus. But a grandchild or a great-grandchild would not. Says the Gemara, ein lo, we darshan from the extra yud in the ein lo, that it means even a grandchild. Miu bat, the Ritvo goes on to say, yesh acheres shi yofe koach habein mikoach hazera. There is one other area where the word bein is more inclusive than the word zera. So in one aspect, the word zera is more inclusive because it includes grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren, whereas bein is only first-generation children. However, explains the Ritvo, there is a case, and by the way, on that, the fact that zera means any descendants, the Talmid HaRashbo brings the posuk from Breishis, Breishis, Lezarocho acharecho etein esa oretz. And Hashem says to Avram and to the others, I will give the land, I will give it to Israel, lezaracho acharecho, to your zera after you. That doesn't mean to your immediate children, it means to your descendants. So you see from there, says the Talmid HaRashba, along the same lines as the Tosfos and the Ritva, that the zera means descendants no matter how far down the line. That's the meaning of the word zera. But in another way, says the Ritva, the word bain is more inclusive. And what's that? The ilu bein mashma afilu zera posel, because a bein includes zera posel, even a mamzer, as we learn in Yevamos, that if one has a child who is a mamzer, amrinan mikol malkum li to your mamzer, that a child is includes a mamzer. That means that if a man dies, leaving only a mamzer as his descendant, then the woman is not chayvus biyibum. There doesn't have to be yibum. Alma de hosum dichtiv bein mashma afilu posel. So you see that where it says bein, it means even apostle. Aval zera lo yimashma ela kosher. But the word zera only implies kosher. V'hainu damin ha'ocha dechitz lichribu yedein lo ayin alov lezer apostle. Dilo zera gufe lo mashma ela kosher. So let's summarize. What does the Ritva said? The Ritva said, in our Gemara, we use the limud of Ein, of Zera Ein law, that she has no children, we use the limud of the extra Yud, to say Ayin, to teach us that it includes even a Bein Posel. Even a grandchild, in this case, who's Posel, who's a Mamzer, still she cannot go back and eat Truma if she has a grandchild who is a Mamzer. And we learn that from Ayin law. What about if she has a grandchild or a great-grandchild, but she has no child? She may also not go back and eat truma. But that's not because we learned it from the limud of Ein law. We know that because bonim, b'dei vonim harehim kevonim, because grandchildren are like children. Asks the Ritva, but in the case of Yibum and Nachalus, in the case of inheritance in Yibum, we find that we need the limud of Ein law, meaning Ein law, go and check and search, to teach us grandchildren and great-grandchildren. We don't just say, you don't need a posuk because b'nei vonim harehim kevonim, because grandchildren are like children. We don't say that in the case of Yibum and Nachalus. Answers the Ritva in the name of the Tosfos. There's a difference between Zera and Bein. When the Torah uses the word Zera, that means seed, it means any descendant, no matter how far down the line. And that's the meaning of the word Zera. It's seed, it's something that continues, that allows for a continued existence of this lineage. Anything that physically allows for the lineage to continue is called Zera. It doesn't matter how far down the line it is. The same as a tree has a seed. If you find a seed of a tree, it doesn't matter whether that came from the particular seed, from the particular tree, or from a second or third generation of that tree. It's capable of keeping that lineage going, that species going. And so that's what Zera means. Zera is biological, and any biological lineage is included. Whereas Bain is familial, and Bain does not include people down the line. It means that the children in your family, the people who are close to you, your immediate family, and that includes your own children, it doesn't include grandchildren. So when it uses the word bein, it's talking about child. When it's using the word zera, it's talking about descendants. The Ritva adds very interestingly, but there's an area in which the word bein is more inclusive, because bein includes mamzer. Even if you have a child who's a mamzer, he's part of your family. He's not your zera. He's not your spiritual descendant. There's physical descendants, and he would not be included in the word Zera, but he is included in the word Bain. So Bain includes children who are Psulim. Zera includes grandchildren. Zera does not include Psulim, and Bain does not include grandchildren. And therefore, you would need an extra limud to teach grandchildren in the case of Bain, and you would need an extra limud to teach Psulim in the case of Zera. And in our Gemara, where we're talking about the Zera Ein law, the case of the woman eating truma, we're talking about Zera, and therefore we don't need a posuk to teach us that grandchildren are included in that halacha. We only need a posuk to teach us that psulim, that mamzerim, and other forms of psulim are included in that halacha, which we would not know if there wasn't a specific limud of Ein law. That's what the Ritva says. Let's take the idea and explore it a little bit further. What would happen, and this was a question that as I was going through some of these horrors with my son-in-law here in Toronto, Oran said, well, how would it work with Piri Viruvia? There's a mitzvah that you've got to have a son and a daughter. A man is chayav with the mitzvah of Piri Viruvia. What happens if the son that he has is a mamzer? He has a daughter and a mamzer son, let us say, or two mamzerim. Would he be chayav or potur from the law of Piri Viruvia? So let's reason it out. I would say that Piri Viruvia follows the same rules as Yibum. Because what is the reason that we require Yibum is Lahakim Zera, is to create children for the deceased brother, to create a lineage, which is the whole idea of Piri Viruvia, that there's a continuation of that generation, there's a continuation of that branch of the family. So if a woman who has a mamzer as a child, or if a man who has a mamzer as a child doesn't get yibum, so a man dies and he's got a mamzer, his child is a mamzer, his brother does not have to be miyabim, his wife, to follow up children because he's got a child. So we see from there that from the perspective of yibum, that child, the mamzer, is called a child because in the Hilchos yibum, it says uvein ein lo, it uses the word bein, and he has a bein. Since he has a bein, there's no yibum. If when you have a bein mamzer, there's no yibum, I would extend that to the dinim of Pru Ravu and to say, therefore, it's considered that there is continuation. If there's no reason to be making the shame at Ochir, if there's no reason to keep the name of the brother going because he's got a child, even though the child's a mamzer, then surely from the perspective of Piri Viruvia also, there would be no need to be Mekai, to go on with the mitzvah and to have to do Piri Viruvia if a person has children who are mamzerim already. That's what I would assume. And in fact, that's how the Ramor Paskins, in the first simon of Evan Hoezer and Siv Vov, the Ramor actually says that. But if a person has a mamzer as a child, the child is not, the person is no longer chayv with a mitzvah of Piri Viruvia. And that also the Beis Yosef brings. In the Shulchan Aruch, it's the Ramor who makes this comment, but he's not disagreeing with the Mechaber, because the Beis Yosef himself brings a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is in Yevomis. It's on Perek Beis Halacha Vav, where the Yerushalmi says that a mamzer is b'noi l'chol dover afilu l'piri v'rivya. A mamzer is his bain. He's considered his son. L'chol dover, for everything, even piri v'rivya. And the Ritvo adds there, the Beis Yosef brings the Ritvo, what that means is the afilu b'vein mamzer yotzo yedei pru revu. That even with a bain mamzer, his yotze with the din, with the mitzvah of Pru Revu. That's what the Ritvo says, and the Beis Yosef says it. So both the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber agree that if a person has a mamzer as a child, he's been mekayim the mitzvah of Pru Revu, or two mamzerim, a boy and a girl, he's been mekayim the mitzvah of Pru Revu. The Minchas Chinuch in the first mitzvah asks the obvious question, but isn't this a mitzvah habor ba'avera? How can you say that a person is mekayim a mitzvah if he has a mamzer as a child? He had to do an aveira to have that child, and a serious aveira too. How could we say that he's mekayim the mitzvah having done an aveira? Is this not a case of mitzvah habo ba'aveira? So the Minchas Chinuch then is mechadish, a halacha in the din of mitzvah habo ba'aveira, which he uses in a number of places. And he says, mitzvah habo ba'aveira is only applies. That means that if you do a mitzvah by means of an avera, you're not mekayim the mitzvah. The mitzvah doesn't count. Where does that apply, explains the Minchas Chinuch? Only when you're doing the avera at the same moment that you're doing the mitzvah. So he gives two examples. For example, if I have a lulav and esrog that is stolen, and I use it to shake lulav and esrog on the first day of Sukkot, then at the very moment I am using that lulav and esrog, I'm being over on the mitzvah of the heshiv es hagezela. I'm mechuyuv to return the gezela. At the moment I'm using it, I'm not returning the gezela. And that's the only way I can be mekayim the mitzvah is by not be returning the gezela. That's a mitzvah habo ba'avero. That's a mitzvah that is performed by means of an avero in the very maaseh ha-mitzvah, in the very act of the mitzvah, and therefore it doesn't count at all. However, if Pesach falls on a Shabbos, and I carry my matzah in Rishus HaRabim, or from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, I'm coming to your home for the Seder, and it's Shabbos, and I carry my matzah to your house. So I'm over in Isidoraisa in bringing the matzah to your house, and now I want to eat the matzah at the Seder. Have I been yet to the mitzvah of matzah? Says the Milchus Chinuch, yes, you have. Because although you performed this mitzvah by having done an Avero earlier, at the moment that you eat the matzah, which is the Kiyum HaMitzvah, you're not performing an Avero at that moment, and therefore you're chayav for the Avero, you're responsible and accountable for the Avero that you did, and you're credited for the mitzvah that you're doing. In the same way, says the Minchas Chinuch, if a man has an illicit relationship with a woman, the Achiv Koris, somebody he's not allowed to be with, then that's an Avero. But that's not the moment that you mekayim the mitzvah of Piri Verivia. You mekayim the mitzvah of Piri Verivia only later on when the child is born. So the Zman Kiyum HaMitzvah is the birth of the child. The Be'ilo, the sexual relationship between the man and the woman, is only a Hechsher mitzvah. That's only making the mitzvah possible. It's like carrying the matzah. You can't eat the matzah unless you have it at the place you're going to be. You can't have a child unless you've had a relationship. But the relationship itself is not the mitzvah. Therefore, says the Minchas Chinuch, this is not mitzvah habo ba'aveiro. And he comments that it's quite odd to say that one could be mekayim the mitzvah of pru revu, of having children and populating the world with mamzerim. There's something about it that technically, mathematically, he's satisfied with, but philosophically he's not satisfied with. And in fact, he brings two deists, that of the Ma'arit al-Ghazi and the Radvaz, who explore this and reject it. And they claim it is a mitzvah habo ba'avera, that you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of pru revu by means of an illicit relationship that creates a mamzer. So if you were a mamzer, you have not been mekayim the mitzvah of pru revu, they say. And they say, the Ma'arit al-Ghazi says, that's the reason that the Rambam and the Rif do not bring the Yerushalmi. Although the Beis Yosef brings the Yerushalmi, and the Ramol says so explicitly in Evan Ezer that one can be mekayim the mitzvah with a mamzer, the Rambam and the Rif do not bring it. And the reason the Ma'arit al-Ghazi says is because they hold it's a mitzvah habo ba'aveiro. And therefore there would be a machlokes in that. So they might hold, either they disagree with the Minchas Chinuch's theory that mitzvah habo ba'aveiro is even if it's in the hechsher mitzvah, even if it's in the preparation for the mitzvah, or they might hold that having a child, piri v'rivi, is kind of, there's an extended kiyum ha-mitzvah, because although you're only mekayim the mitzvah when the child is born, the maisa ha-mitzvah is the be'ilah, which is quite interesting, because at the birth, the man does nothing, he's passive. It's the woman who gives birth, and she's not mechuyevis, but piri v'rivi. So what is the maisa ha-mitzvah? What is the action? Piri v'rivi is not just a state of being, piri v'rivi is a mitzvah. What is the action of the mitzvah? I find the Minchas Chinuch a little difficult. The be'ilah is not just a hechsher mitzvah. The be'ilah is the maisa ha-mitzvah. Now, it's a long mitzvah, and unless you complete it with the birth, then the maaser will not have been a mitzvah. So it's true that you only get credited with a mitzvah later on when the child is born. But there's no maaser mitzvah other than the be'ilah, other than the physical relationship between the man and the woman. That's the maaser mitzvah. So that might be what the Ma'arit al-Ghazi holds, and that's why the Rambam and the Rif don't bring it, because it is a mitzvah ba'avero, because be'ilo is not a hechsher mitzvah, be'ilo is part of the maisa ha-mitzvah. It's not the kiyum ha-mitzvah, but it's the maisa ha-mitzvah. And there are others that I've seen. I think it's Rabbi Yoshua ben Soloveitchik from the United States that I saw a lot of discussion a long time ago, and I don't remember in relationship to which mitzvah he might even bring this one, that there's a difference between a maisa ha-mitzvah and a kiyum ha-mitzvah. That sometimes the maisa ha-mitzvah is not the kiyum ha-mitzvah. The kiyum ha-mitzvah comes later on. And that's how we would understand it over here. But let's have a look at a possible interpretation using the Ritva that we've learned. Because the Ritva says the whole thing stems from Yevamos. And in Yevamos we're told that if it says bein, it says bein anglo, that if he doesn't have if a man dies not leaving a child, then yibum has to take place. From the fact that it says bein ein lo, we learn ayin lo goes on children, on grandchildren as well. Meaning, if it didn't say ayin lo, then we would not include grandchildren. However, psulim are included. So if the person has a mamzer, the Ritva says very clearly, based on the Yerushalmi, if a man has a mamzer and then dies, his wife does not need, his widow does not need yibum. The mamzer counts as a child. It's benoy lechol dover. It's his child for every matter. That's considered his child. That's what it is in yibum. And we reasoned that that should be extended to pruruvu. If you don't need to be meyabim a woman whose deceased husband left behind a mamzer, then a man who has a mamzer should not have to be mekayim the mitzvah of pruruvu. That we learned from there, and that might be the reason for the Yerushalmi, and that's why the Tzvi Ritva, interestingly enough, himself who makes that halacha and who the Beis Yosef brings. So the source of the din in the Beis Yosef, and therefore in the Ritva, in the Ramor probably as well, in Evanor, is our own Ritva. But it's possible that it goes the following way. Maybe it doesn't mean that he's mekayim the mitzvah. Maybe the Minchas Chinuch is right. You can't be mekayim the mitzvah of pru revu by bringing mamzerim into the world. That's not the Torah's intention with pru revu. However, maybe if you have a mamzer as a child, you're not high of the mitzvah of pru revu. There's a ptur. Sometimes you're potter from a mitzvah because you've already been mekayim the mitzvah. So you wake up in the morning and you're high of the mitzvah's tefillah. You're high of the mitzvah's tefillin. You've got a diamond. You've got to put on tefillin. Once you've put your tefillin on, you're there, you're potter. So one of the ways of becoming potter from a mitzvah is because you've done the mitzvah. But there are other ways to be potter from the mitzvah. You can be potter because you're an oynes. There's some kind of emergency situation beyond your control that patters you. You can be potter because you're in a state of being where the mitzvah doesn't apply to you. You can be a woman, the mitzvah doesn't apply to you. So maybe a man with a child, even if the child is a mamzer, doesn't have the mitzvah of pruruvu, not because he did the mitzvah, but because he doesn't have the mitzvah. He's not chay of the mitzvah. And not because of mitzvah habor ba'avera. Maybe simply because of the laws of yibim, because if he has a child, and we say it's bein lechol dover, this is a child for every man, he doesn't have a chiyuv, just as a person who already has children doesn't have a chiyuv. It's only a person who already has children doesn't have a chiyuv of pruruvu because he's been mekayim the mitzvah. Here you're talking about a person who has a child without having been mekayim the mitzvah. He had a child that was a mamzer, so maybe he wasn't mekayim the mitzvah, but maybe nevertheless he's not chay of pruruvu. And that's how I would learn it, and that's how I would understand the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch and answer the Minchas Chinuch's concerns. The only difficulty with that is the loshon both of the Ritva and of the Ramo. The loshon of the Ritva in the Beis Yosef, as the Minchas Chinuch himself brings the Beis Yosef, is let me just find it. The Ritva clearly says he has been yotze piri v'rivya if he has a mamzer child, and there are more in the Shulchan Aruch says exactly the same thing. If a person gave birth to a mamzer or a cheresh shoytev a katan, kiyem hamitzvah, he has been mekayim the mitzvah. So those words set aside my suggestion that maybe we're talking about a case, certainly in these Rishonim, maybe we're talking about a case where a person is not chayav period of Rishonim, not because he's already been mekayim the mitzvah, but because he doesn't fulfill the conditions required for the mitzvah. The conditions require you don't have a child. This person has a child, so you're not chayav period of Rishonim. However, that doesn't work well in the Loshon of the Ritva, and it doesn't work well in the Loshon of the Ramor. They clearly say that he has been mekayim, that one has actually been mekayim. Since a mamzer is one's child in every matter, that's called kiyum mitzvahs piri v'rivya, according to the Ramo and the Ritva. And for some reason, the Rambam and the Rish don't bring this halacha, according to the Marital Gazi. The reason for that is because it's a mitzvah habo ba'avero, and there's no way that one can be mekayim the mitzvah of piri v'rivya. That's the piece of Gemara on this section. I just want to go a little bit further so that we get to the two dots in the Gemara itself. So if you go back to the Gemara, the itzrich lemichtav kidusheho la'avio, the itzrich lemichtav ma'aseh yodeho la'avio. The Gemara just makes a comment that we need psukim to teach us two halachas about a naira, and we need two separate psukim. We need the posuk to teach us that the Kiddushin goes to the father, and that we've now learnt very clearly from the posuk of Kesef Ein Lo. And we also need the posuk of Naisa Yodeho, that if she earns money as a Nairo, that money goes to the father. And we learn that from Bechi Yimku Ishis Bitila Amoma, Amoma Se Yodeho Le Rabba Afbatna Mima Se Yodeho Le Aviho. And we learned from the previous Amud. Why do we need two psukim? Aren't they the same principle that revenue accruing to a Nairo goes to the account of the father? Isn't that just a simple principle? No, says the Gemara, these are different principles. The ikos of Rachmona Kiddusheo Lavio. Because if we were told the law of Kiddushin, Hava Amina Mishum Delo Tarcho Behu, I might have thought the reason is because she didn't put any effort into it. It's not as if she earns the money of Kiddushin. It's money that comes to her. But maybe Maaseh Yodeo is a different kind of idea. Maaseh Yodeo is something she earns. Maybe that goes to her. Maybe that belongs to her. And if the Torah would only tell us that work, that money she gets from the work she does belongs to her, I would have thought the reason is it does not belong to her, it goes to the father. I would have thought the reason is the mitzano mine. Because she is supported by her father. Her father gives her food. So there's a quid pro quo. He gives her food, and maybe that's why anything she earns, she gives to the father. About kiddushin, the me'al makati, but the kiddushin is not for being, is not in place of mezonos, of being fed and having what to eat. It's just something that comes out of the blue. It's like winning a lottery. Me'al makati la'ema dido havu, I might have thought that she can keep it herself. And so we need different psukim for each of these sources of revenue. That whether she earns revenue by means of her labor, or she earns revenue as a result of an act of kiddushin, in both cases, and possibly for separate reasons, or maybe for the same reason after all, the money goes to the father, and probably the underlying principle is we do learn from the Dorim. As the Rashbo has told us, this remains a limud from the Dorim, although there's a whole lot we cannot learn from the Dorim, but we do learn that the authority and control that a father has over Ktano extends 6 months beyond Katnus into Nairus. That we do learn. So just as all of these things would go to the father if she's a Ktano, so these things go to the father if she's a Nairo, but we couldn't use one posuk to teach us Kiddushin and Maaseh Yodeho. We need a posuk for each of them for those reasons. Which takes us to the two dots, and then Emir Tashem next week we'll pick up from the two dots and go further. I'm just going to stop the recording, and then if there are any questions or comments, please feel free to make them. Thank you very much for joining us today.